long Thursday morning and even longer Thursday afternoon taught Roberts a valuable lesson. Not to sneer at 3 or 4 hours sleep a night simply because he had spent his entire life under the mistaken impression that he had a right to at least 6 and usually 7. It also served as a hideous preview. If things didn't improve, he could look forward to feeling like this most of the time. Hell, all of the time. He went into the bedroom at 10 o'clock and again at 1, hoping for a little nap. Even a cat nap would do, and half an hour would be a lifesaver. But he could not so much as drowse. He was miserably tired, but not in the least bit sleepy. Around 3 o'clock, he decided to make himself a Lipton cup of soup. He filled the tea kettle with fresh water, put it on to boil, and opened the cupboard over the counter where he kept condiments, spices, and various envelopes containing foods which only astronauts and old men actually seem to eat. Powders to which the consumer needs only add hot water. He pushed cans and bottles around in aimless fashion and then simply stared into the cupboard for a while, as if expecting the box of soup packets to magically appear in the space he had made. When they didn't, he would repeat the process, only this time moving things back to their original positions before staring in again with a look of distant perplexity, which was becoming, Ralph mercifully did not know this, his dominant expression. When the tea kettle shrieked, he put it on one of the rear burners and went back to staring into the cupboard. It dawned on him, very, very slowly, that he must have drunk his last packet of cup of soup yesterday or the day before, although he could not for the life of him remember doing so. "That's a surprise," he asked the boxes and bottles in the open cupboard. "I'm so tired I can't remember my own name." "Yes, I can," he thought. "It's Leon Redbone. So there." It wasn't much of a joke, but he felt a small smile. It felt as light as a feather touch his lips. He stepped into the bathroom, combed his hair, and then went downstairs. "Here's Audie Murphy heading out into enemy territory in search of supplies," he thought. "Primary target? One box of Lipton chicken rice cup of soup packets. If locating and securing this target should prove impossible, I'll divert to my secondary, noodles and beef. I know this is a risky mission, but..." "But I work best alone," he finished as he came out on the porch. Old Mrs. Perrine happened to be passing, and she favored Ralph with a sharp look, but said nothing. He waited for her to get a little way up the sidewalk. He did not feel capable of conversation with anyone this afternoon, least of all Mrs. Perrine, who at 82 could still have found stimulating and useful work among the Marines at Paris Island. He pretended to be examining the spider plant, which hung from the hook under the porch eave, until she had reached what he deemed a safe distance, then crossed Harris Avenue to the Red Apple, which was where the day's real troubles began. He entered the convenience store once again, mulling over the spectacular failure of the delayed sleep experiment, and wondering if the advice in the library texts was no more than an uptown version of the folk remedies his acquaintances seemed so eager to press upon him. It was an unpleasant idea, but he thought his mind, or the force below his mind, which was actually in charge of this slow torture, had sent him a message which was even more unpleasant. "You have a sleep window, Ralph. It's not as big as it once was, and it seems to be getting smaller with every passing week. But you better be grateful for what you've got, because a small window is better than no window at all. You can see that now, don't you?" "Yes," Ralph mumbled as he walked down the center aisle to the bright red cup of soup boxes. "I see that very well." Sue, the afternoon counter girl, laughed cheerfully. "You must have money in the bank, Ralph," she said. "Beg pardon?" Ralph didn't turn. He was inventorying the red boxes. Here was onion, split pea, the beef and noodles combo. But where the hell was the chicken and rice? "My mom always said people who talk to themselves have..." "Oh, my God!" For a moment, Ralph thought she had simply made a statement a little too complex for his tired mind to immediately grasp. Something about how people who talk to themselves had found God. And then she screamed. He had hunkered down to check the boxes on the bottom shelf, and the scream shot him to his feet so hard and fast that his knees popped. He wheeled toward the front of the store, bumping the top shelf of the soup display with his elbow and knocking half a dozen red boxes into the aisle. "Sue? What's wrong?" Sue paid no attention. She was looking out through the door with her fisted hands pressed against her lips and her brown eyes huge above them. God, look at the blood, she cried in a choked voice. Ralph turned further, knocking a few more Lipton boxes into the aisle, and looked through the Red Apple's dirty show window. What he saw drew a gasp from him, and it took him a space of seconds, five maybe, to realize that the bloody beaten woman staggering toward the Red Apple was Helen Deepnoe. Ralph had always thought Helen the prettiest woman on the west side of town, but there was nothing pretty about her today. One of her eyes was puffed shut. There was a gash at her left temple that was soon going to be lost in the gaudy swelling of a fresh bruise. Her puffy lips and her cheeks were covered with blood. The blood had come from her nose, which was still leaking. She wove through the Red Apple's little parking lot toward the door like a drunk, her one good eye seeming to see nothing. It simply stared. More frightening than the way she looked was the way she was handling Natalie. She had the squalling, frightened baby slung casually on one hip, carrying her as she might have carried her books to high school 10 or 12 years before. "Oh, Jesus, she's going to drop the kid," Sue screamed. But although she was 10 steps closer to the door than he was, she made no move, simply stood where she was with her hands pressed to her mouth and her eyes gobbling up her face. Ralph suddenly didn't feel tired anymore. He sprinted up the aisle, tore open the door, and ran outside. He was just in time to catch Helen by the shoulders as she banged a hip against the ice cabinet, mercifully not the hip with Natalie on it, and went veering off in a new direction. "Helen," he yelled. "Jesus, Helen, what happened?" "Huh?" she asked, her voice dully curious, totally unlike the voice of the lively young woman who sometimes accompanied him to the movies and moaned over Mel Gibson. Her good eye rolled toward him, and he saw that same dull curiosity in it, a look that said she didn't know who she was, let alone where she was, or what had happened, or when. "Huh? Ralph? What?" The baby slipped. Ralph let go of Helen, grabbed for Natalie, and managed to snag one of her jumper straps. Nat screamed, waved her hands, and stared at him with huge dark blue eyes. He got his other hand between Nat's legs an instant before the strap he was holding tore free. For a moment, the howling baby balanced on his hand like a gymnast on a balance beam, and Ralph could feel the damp bulge of her diapers through the overall she was wearing. Then he slipped his other hand around her back and hoisted her up against his chest. His heart was pounding hard, and even with the baby safe in his arms, he kept seeing her slip away, kept seeing her head with its cap of fine downy hair slamming against the butt-lidded pavement with a sickening crack. "Huh? Ralph?" Helen asked. She saw Natalie in Ralph's arms, and some of the dullness went out of her good eye. She raised her hands toward the child, and in Ralph's arms, Natalie mimicked the gesture with her own chubby hands. Then Helen staggered, struck the side of the building, and reeled backward a step, one foot tangled in the other. Ralph saw splatters of blood on her small white sneakers, and it was amazing how bright everything was all of a sudden. The color had come back into the world, at least temporarily. And she would have fallen if Sue hadn't picked that moment to finally venture out. Instead of going down, Helen landed against the opening door and just leaned there like a drunk against a lamppost. "Ralph?" The expression in her eyes was a little sharper now, and Ralph saw it wasn't so much curiosity as incredulity. She drew in a deep breath and made an effort to force intelligible words past her swelled lips.
Give me my baby. Baby. Give me Nally.
"Not just yet, Helen," Ralph said. "You're not too steady on your feet right now." Sue was still on the other side of the door, holding it so Helen wouldn't fall. The girl's cheeks and forehead were ashy pale, her eyes filled with tears. "Get out here," Ralph told her. "Hold her up."
"I can't," she blubbered. "She's all bloody."
"Oh, for God's sake, quit it. It's Helen, Helen Deepnoe from up the street." And although Sue must have known that, actually hearing the name seemed to turn the trick. She slipped around the open door, and when Helen staggered backward again, Sue curled an arm around her shoulders and braced her firmly. That expression of incredulous surprise remained on Helen's face. Ralph found it harder and harder to look at. It made him feel sick to his stomach. "Ralph, what happened? Was it an accident?" He turned his head and saw Bill McGovern standing at the edge of the parking lot. He was wearing one of his natty blue shirts with the iron's creases still in the sleeves and holding one of his long-fingered, oddly delicate hands up to shade his eyes. He looked strange, somehow naked that way. But Ralph had no time to think about why. Too much was happening. "It was no accident," he said. "She's been beaten up. Here, take the kid." He held Natalie out to McGovern, who at first shrank back and then took the baby. Natalie immediately began to shriek again. McGovern, looking like someone who has just been handed an overfilled airsick bag, held her out at arm's length with her feet dangling. Behind him, a small crowd was beginning to gather, many of them teenage kids in baseball uniforms on their way home from an afternoon game at the field around the corner. They were staring at Helen's puffed and bloody face with an unpleasant avidity, and Ralph found himself thinking of the Bible story about the time Noah had gotten drunk on the ark. The good sons who had looked away from the naked old man lying on his pallet, the bad one who had looked and laughed. Gently, he replaced Sue's arm with his own. Helen's good eye rolled back to him. She said his name more clearly this time, more positively, and the gratitude Ralph heard in her blurry voice made him feel like crying. "Sue, take the baby. Bill doesn't have a clue." She did, folding Nat gently and expertly into her arms. McGovern gave her a grateful smile, and Ralph suddenly realized what was wrong with the way he looked. McGovern wasn't wearing the Panama hat, which seemed as much a part of him, in the summertime at least, as the wen on the bridge of his nose. "Hey, mister, what happened?" one of the baseball kids asked. "Nothing that's any of your business," Ralph said. "Looks like she went a few rounds with Riddick Bowe." "Nah, Tyson," one of the other baseball kids said, and incredibly there was laughter. "Get out of here," Ralph shouted at them, suddenly furious. "Go peddle your papers. Mind your business." They shuffled back a few steps, but no one left. It was blood they were looking at, and not on a movie screen. "Helen, can you walk?"
"Yes," she said. Think so."
He led her carefully around the open door and into the red apple. She moved slowly, shuffling from foot to foot like an old woman. The smell of sweat and spent adrenaline was baking out of her pores in a sour reek. And Ralph felt his stomach turn over again. It wasn't the smell, not really. It was the effort to reconcile this Helen with a pert and pleasantly sexy woman he had spoken to yesterday while she worked in her flower beds. Ralph suddenly remembered something else about yesterday. Helen had been wearing blue shorts, cut quite high, and he had noticed a couple of bruises on her legs, a large yellow blotch far up on the left thigh, a fresher, darker smudge on the right calf. He walked Helen toward the little office area behind the cash register. He glanced up into the convex anti-theft mirror mounted in the corner and saw McGovern holding the door for Sue. "Lock the door," he said over his shoulder.
"Gee, Ralph, I'm not supposed to."
"Just for a couple of minutes," Ralph said. "Please."
"Well, okay, I guess."
Ralph heard the snick of the bolt being turned as he eased Helen into the hard plastic contour chair behind the littery desk. He picked up the telephone and punched the button marked 911. Before the phone could ring on the other end, a blood-streaked hand reached out and pushed down the gray disconnect button.
"Door, Ralph,"
she swallowed with an obvious effort, and tried again.
"Don't!"
"Yes," Ralph said, "I'm going to." Now it was fear he saw in her one good eye, and nothing dull about it.
"No," she said. "Please, Ralph, don't."
She looked past him and held out her hands again. The humble, pleading look on her beaten face made Ralph wince with dismay.
"Ralph," Sue asked, "she wants the baby."
"I know. Go ahead." Sue handed Natalie to Helen, and Ralph watched as the baby, a little over a year old now, he was pretty sure, put her arms around her mother's neck and her face against her mother's shoulder. Helen kissed the top of Nat's head. It clearly hurt her to do this, but she did it again. And then again. Looking down at her, Ralph could see blood grimed into the faint creases on the nape of Helen's neck, like dirt. As he looked at this, he felt the anger begin to pulse again. "It was Ed, wasn't it?" he asked. "Of course it was. You didn't hit the cut-off button on the phone when someone tried to call 911 if you'd been beaten up by a total stranger." But he had to ask.
"Yes," she said.
Her voice was no more than a whisper. The answer a secret imparted into the fine cloud of her baby daughter's hair.
"Yes, it was Ed. But you can't call the police. She looked up now, the good eye full of fear and misery. Please, don't call the police, Ralph. I can't bear to think of Natalie's dad in jail for... Helen burst into tears. Natalie goggled at her mother for a moment in comic surprise, and then joined her. Ralph, McGovern asked hesitantly, do you want me to get her some Tylenol or something? Better not, he said. We don't know what's wrong with her, how bad she might be hurt. His eyes shifted to the show window, not wanting to see what was out there, hoping not to, and seeing it anyway. Avid faces lined up all the way down to the place where the beer cooler cut off the view. Some of them were cupping their hands to the sides of their faces to cut the glare. What should we do, you guys? Sue asked. She was looking at the gawkers and picking nervously at the hem of the red apple duster employees had to wear. If the company finds out I locked the door during business hours, I'm apt to lose my job. Helen tugged at his hand. Please, Ralph, she repeated. Only it came out, please, Ralph, through her swollen lips. Don't call anybody. Ralph looked at her uncertainly. He had seen a lot of women wearing a lot of bruises over the course of his life, and a couple, although not many in all honesty, who had been beaten much more severely than Helen. It hadn't always seemed this grim, though. His mind and morals had been formed at a time when people believed that what went on between a husband and wife behind the closed doors of their marriage was their business, and that included the man who hit with his fists and the woman who cut with her tongue. You couldn't make people behave, and meddling into their affairs, even with the best of intentions, all too often turned friends into enemies. But then he thought of the way she had been carrying Natalie as she staggered across the parking lot, held casually on one hip like a textbook. If she had dropped the baby in the parking lot, or crossing Harris Avenue, she probably wouldn't have known it. Ralph guessed that it was nothing but instinct that had caused Helen to take the baby in the first place. She hadn't wanted to leave Nat in the care of the man who had beaten her so badly she could only see out of one eye and talk in mushy, rounded syllables. He thought of something else as well, something that had to do with the days following Carolyn's death earlier in the year. He'd been surprised at the depth of his grief. It had been an expected death, after all. He had believed he had taken care of most of his grieving while Carolyn was still alive, and it had rendered him awkward and ineffective about the final arrangements which needed to be made. He had managed the call to the Brooking Smith funeral home, but it was Helen who had gotten the obit form from the Derry News and helped him to fill it out. Helen, who had gone with him to pick out a coffin. McGovern, who hated death and the trappings which surrounded it, had made himself scarce. And Helen, who had helped him choose a floral centerpiece, the one which said, "Beloved wife." And it had been Helen, of course, who had orchestrated the little party afterward, providing sandwiches from Frank's Catering and soft drinks and beer from the Red Apple. These were things Helen had done for him when he could not do them for himself. Did he not have an obligation to repay her kindness, even if Helen might not see it as kindness right now? "Bill," he asked, "what do you think?" McGovern looked from Ralph to Helen, sitting in the red plastic chair with her battered face lowered, and then back to Ralph again. He produced a handkerchief and wiped his lips nervously. "I don't know. I like Helen a lot, and I want to do the right thing. You know I do, but something like this, who knows what the right thing is?" Ralph suddenly remembered what Carolyn used to say whenever he started moaning and bitching about some chore he didn't want to do, some errand he didn't want to run, or some duty call he didn't want to make. "It's a long walk back to Eden, sweetheart, so don't sweat the small stuff." He reached for the phone again, and this time when Helen reached for his wrist, he pushed it away. "You've reached the Derry Police Department," a recorded voice told him. "Push 1 for emergency services. Push 2 for police services. Push 3 for information." Ralph, who suddenly understood he needed all 3, hesitated for a second and then pushed 2. The telephone buzzed and a woman's voice said, "This is police 911. How may I help you?" He took a deep breath and said, "This is Ralph Roberts. I'm at the Red Apple store on Harris Avenue with my neighbor from up the street. Her name is Helen Deepnow. She's been beaten up pretty badly." He put his hand gently on the side of Helen's face and she pressed her forehead against his side. He could feel the heat of her skin through his shirt. Please, come as fast as you can. He hung the telephone up, then squatted down next to Helen. Natalie saw him, crowed with delight, and reached out to give his nose a friendly honk. Ralph smiled, kissed her tiny palm, then looked into Helen's face. I'm sorry, Helen, he said, but I had to. I couldn't not do it. Do you understand that? I couldn't not do it.
I don't understand anything, she said.
Her nose had stopped bleeding, but when she reached up to swipe at it, she winced back from a touch of her own fingers. Helen, why did he do it? Why would Ed beat you up like this? He found himself remembering other bruises, mostly on Helen's arms. A pattern of them, perhaps. If there had been a pattern, he had missed it until now. Because of Carolyn's death, and because of the insomnia which had come afterward. In any case, he did not believe this was the first time Ed had put his hands on his wife. Today might have been a drastic escalation, but it hadn't been the first time. He could grasp that idea and admit its logic, but he discovered he still couldn't see Ed doing it. He could see Ed's quick grin, his lively eyes, the way his hands moved restlessly when he talked, but he couldn't see Ed using those hands to beat the crap out of his wife, no matter how hard he tried. Then a memory resurfaced, a memory of Ed walking stiff-legged toward the man who had been driving the blue pickup. It had been a Ford Ranger, hadn't it? And then flicking the flat of his hand across the heavy-set man's jowls. Remembering that was like opening the door of Fibber McGee's closet in that old radio show. Only what came falling out wasn't an avalanche of old store junk, but a series of vivid images from that day last July. The Thunderheads building over the airport, Ed's arm popping out of the Datsun's window and waving up and down as if he could make the gate slide open faster that way. The scarf with the Chinese symbol on it. Hey, hey, Susan Day, how many kids did you kill today? Ralph thought, only it was Ed's voice he heard, and he pretty well knew what Helen was going to say before she even opened her mouth. So stupid, she said dully. He hit me because I signed a petition. That's all it was. They're circulating all over town. Someone pushed it into my face when I was going into the supermarket day before yesterday. He said something about a benefit for woman care, and that seemed all right. Besides, the baby was fussing, so I just... You just signed it, Ralph finished softly. She nodded and began to cry again. What petition? McGovern asked. To bring Susan Day to Derry, Ralph told him. She's a feminist... I know who Susan Day is, McGovern said irritably. Anyway, a bunch of people are trying to get her here to speak on behalf of woman care.
When Ed came home today, he was in a great mood, Helen said through her tears. He almost always is on Thursdays because it's his half day. He was talking about how he was going to spend the afternoon pretending to read a book and actually just watching the sprinkler go around. You know how he is.
Yes, Ralph said, remembering how Ed had plunged his arm into one of the heavy-set man's barrels. And the crafty grin, I know a trick worth two of that, on his face. Yes, I know how he is.
I sent him out to get some baby formula, her voice was rising, becoming fretful and frightened. I didn't know he'd be upset. I'd all but forgotten about signing the damn thing, to tell the truth, and I still don't know exactly why he was so upset, but... But when he came back,
she hugged Natalie to her, trembling. Shh, Helen, take it easy. Everything's okay.
No, it's not.
She looked up at him, tears streaming from one eye and seeping out from beneath the swelled lid of the other.
It's not. No, not.
Why didn't he stop this time?
And what's going to happen to me and the baby? Where will we go? I don't have any money except for what's in the joint checking account. I don't have a job. Oh, Ralph, why did you call the police? You shouldn't have done that.
And she hit his forearm with a strengthless little fist. You're going to get through this just fine, he said. You've got a lot of friends in the neighborhood. But he barely heard what he was saying and hadn't felt her small punch at all. The anger was thudding away in his chest and at his temples like a second heartbeat. Not why didn't he stop. That wasn't what she had said. What she had said was... Why didn't he stop this time? This time. Helen, where's Ed now?
Home, I guess, she said dully. Ralph patted her on the shoulder, then turned and started for the door.
Ralph? Bill McGovern asked. He sounded alarmed. Where are you going?
Lock the door after me, Ralph told Sue.
Geez, I don't know if I can do that.
Sue looked doubtfully at the line of gawkers peering in through the dirty window. There were more of them now.
You can, he said, then cocked his head, catching the first faint wail of an approaching siren.
Hear that?
Yes, but
the cops will tell you what to do, and your boss won't be mad at you either. He'll probably give you a medal for handling everything just right.
If he does, I'll split it with you, she said, then glanced at Helen again. A little color had come back into Sue's cheeks, but not much.
Jeepers, Ralph, look at her. Did he really beat her up because she signed some stupid paper in Shaw's?
I guess so, Ralph said. The conversation made perfect sense to him, but it was coming in long distance. His rage was closer. It had its hot arms locked around his neck, it seemed. He wished he were 40 again, even 50, so he could give Ed a taste of his own medicine. And he had an idea he might try doing that anyway. He was turning the thumb bolt of the door when McGovern grabbed his shoulder.
What do you think you're doing?
Going to see Ed.
Are you kidding? He'll take you apart if you get in his face. Didn't you see what he did to her?
You bet I did, Ralph replied.
The words weren't quite a snarl, but close enough to make McGovern drop his hand.
You're 70 fucking years old, Ralph, in case you forgot. And Helen needs a friend right now. Not some busted-up antique she can visit because his hospital room is 3 doors down from hers.
Bill was right, of course, but that only made Ralph angrier. He supposed the insomnia was at work in this, too, stoking his anger and blurring his judgment. But that made no difference. In a way, the anger was a relief. It was better, certainly, than drifting through a world where everything had turned shades of dark gray.
If he beats me up bad enough, they'll give me some Demerol and I can get a decent night's sleep, he said. Now leave me alone, Bill.
He crossed the Red Apple parking lot at a brisk walk. A police car was approaching, with its blue grill flashes pulsing.
Questions. What happened? She okay?
Were thrown at him, but Ralph ignored them. He paused on the sidewalk, waited for the police car to swing into the parking lot, then crossed Harris Avenue at that same brisk walk with McGovern trailing anxiously after him at a prudent distance.
Ed and Helen Deepnow lived in a small Cape Cod, chocolate brown, whipped cream trim, the kind of house which older women often call darling. 4 houses up from the one Ralph and Bill McGovern shared. Carolyn had liked to say the Deepnows belonged to the Church of the Latter-day Yuppies, although her genuine liking for them had robbed the phrase of any real bite. They were laissez-faire vegetarians who considered both fish and dairy products okay. They'd worked for Clinton in the last election. And the car in the driveway, not a Datsun now, but one of the new minivans, was wearing bumper stickers which said, "Split wood, not atoms," and "Fur on animals, not people." The Deepnows had also apparently kept every album they had ever purchased during the 60s. Carolyn had found this one of their most endearing characteristics. And now, as Ralph approached the Cape Cod with his hands curled into fists at his sides, he heard Grace Slick wailing one of those old San Francisco anthems. "One pill makes you bigger, one pill makes you small, and the ones that Mother gives you don't do anything at all. Go ask Alice when she's 10 feet tall." The music was coming from a boombox on the Cape Cod's postage-stamp-sized porch. A sprinkler twirled on the lawn, making a sh, sh, sh sound as it cast rainbows in the air and deposited a shiny wet patch on the sidewalk. Ed Deepnow, shirtless, was sitting in a lawn chair to the left of the concrete walk with his legs crossed, looking up at the sky with a bemused expression of a man trying to decide if the cloud passing overhead looks more like a horse or a unicorn. One bare foot bopped up and down in time to the music. The book lying open and face down in his lap went perfectly with the music pouring from the boombox. "Even Cowgirls Get the Blues," by Tom Robbins. An all but perfect summer vignette, a scene of small-town serenity Norman Rockwell might have painted and then titled Afternoon Off. All you had to overlook was the blood on Ed's knuckles and the drop on the left lens of his round John Lennon specs.
"Ralph, for God's sake, don't get into a fight with him," McGovern hissed as Ralph left the sidewalk and cut across the lawn. He walked through the lawn sprinkler's fine cold spray almost without feeling it. Ed turned, saw him, and broke into a sunny grin.
"Hey, Ralph," he said. "Good to see you, man."
In his mind's eye, Ralph saw himself reaching out and shoving Ed's chair, pushing him over and spilling him onto his lawn. He saw Ed's eyes widen with shock and surprise behind the lenses of his glasses. This vision was so real, he even saw the way the sun reflected on the face of Ed's watch as he tried to sit up.
"Grab yourself a beer and drag up a rock," Ed was saying, "if you feel like a game of chess."
"Beer? A game of chess? Christ Jesus, Ed, what's wrong with you?"
Ed didn't answer immediately, only looked at Ralph with an expression that was both frightening and infuriating. It was a mixture of amusement and shame. The look of a man who's getting ready to say, "Ah, shit, honey, did I forget to put out the trash again?" Ralph pointed down the hill, past McGovern, who was standing. He would have been lurking if there'd been something to lurk behind, near the wet patch the sprinkler had put on the sidewalk, watching them nervously. The first police car had been joined by a second, and Ralph could faintly hear the crackle of radio calls through the open windows. The crowd had gotten quite a bit bigger.
"The police are there because of Helen," he said, telling himself not to shout. It would do no good to shout, and shouting anyway. "They're there because you beat up your wife. Is that getting through to you?"
"Oh," Ed said, and rubbed his cheek ruefully.
"That?"
"Yes, that," Ralph said. He now felt almost stupefied with rage. Ed peered past him at the police cars, at the crowd standing around the Red Apple, and then he saw McGovern.
"Bill," he cried. McGovern recoiled. Ed either didn't notice or pretended not to. "Hey, man, drag up a rock. Want a beer?"
That was when Ralph knew he was going to hit Ed, break his stupid little round-lensed spectacles, drive a splinter of glass into his eye, maybe. He was going to do it. Nothing on earth could stop him from doing it. Except, at the last moment, something did. It was Carolyn's voice he heard inside his head most frequently these days. When he wasn't just muttering along to himself, that was. But this wasn't Carolyn's voice. This one, as unlikely as it seemed, belonged to Trigger Vashon, whom he'd only seen once or twice since the day Trig had saved him from the thunderstorm, the day Carolyn had had her first seizure.
"Aye, Ralph, be damn careful, you. This one crazy like a fox. Maybe he wanted you to hit him."
Yes, he decided. Maybe that was just what Ed wanted.
Why? Who knew?
Maybe to muddy the waters up a little bit. Maybe just because he was crazy.
"Cut the shit," he said, dropping his voice almost to a whisper.
He was gratified to see Ed's attention snap back to him in a hurry, and even more pleased to see Ed's pleasantly vague expression of rueful amusement disappear. It was replaced by a narrow, watchful expression. It was, Ralph thought, the look of a dangerous animal with its wind up. Ralph hunkered down so he could look directly at Ed. "Was it Susan Day?" he asked in the same soft voice. "Susan Day and the abortion business? Something about dead babies? Is that why you unloaded on Helen?" There was another question on his mind. "Who are you, really, Ed?" But before he could ask it, Ed reached out, placed a hand in the center of Ralph's chest, and pushed. Ralph fell backward onto the damp grass, catching himself on his elbows and shoulders. He lay there with his feet flat on the ground and his knees up, watching as Ed suddenly sprang out of his lawn chair.
"Ralph, don't mess with him," McGovern called from his place of relative safety on the sidewalk.